Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, it's a good life. We're going to talk grilling today. Whether you prefer propane or charcoal, meat or veggies, tongs or brands, grilling is a universally enjoyed summer culinary activity, and it's not hard to do. With a grill and some food, maybe a little marinade, the possibilities are limitless. But there are a few tricks, and we have two experts in the studio with us to answer your questions. Jeremy Stanton is the owner of the Meat Market in Great Barrington and runs Fire Roasted Catering. He's a CIA-trained chef specializing in preparing entire meals over an open wood fire. He has a passion for doing so specifically with local food and often collaborates on culinary endeavors with his fellow members of Berkshire Farm and Table. Chef AJ Paul created his own line of sauces and marinades, Miss Sydney's Secret Family Recipes, and we've been trying them, and they're really, really good. He and his family moved to the U.S. from India in the 80s with less than $100 to their name, worked his way through culinary school, and went to start the successful marinade business. He's also currently the food and beverage manager for the Malozzi Group. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
If you guys have a question out there about grilling or barbecuing or meat in general, this is the program for you. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments on our website. It's the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can go to Facebook and comment there. We have a Vox Pop wall post. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, we love your calls. 1-800-348-2551. All right, let's talk about what you have brought here, gentlemen. AJ, what did you bring?
Today we did a beet juice couscous, apple fennel coleslaw, and a Miss Sydney's marinated pork tenderloin. When we go out to most of these events, it's also education. When you're a culinarian, you know, you want to bring it forth, educate the people. So instead of normal cabbage coleslaw that you see, you know, New York State is known for its apples.
Yeah.
Known for its great fennel, which a lot of people walk past the store. You know, he's found this beautiful vegetable and they don't know what to do with it. And then, so we made a coleslaw with that. And we actually juiced the beets on our juicer and did our couscous out of that. The colors are beautiful for the summer.
It is beautiful.
But that's what we came in with today.
The coleslaw is really unique and delicious.
Yeah, it's a good contrast of everything else, color, you know, especially, you know, a lot of people eat with their eyes in the summer, you know, and you do this, 90% of this can be done ahead of time.
Yeah.
For your summer barbecue and the recipes online.
It goes really well with the pork, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Tell us about the marinade that you used on this pork, because it is delicious. And how long did you marinate it?
The pork we marinated overnight. It's a Miss Sydney's marinade. It's a local company. We started out of Del Mar about 12 years ago. And we've grown from there. We started just making a marinade. The base of a marinade is a process of soaking foods in a seasoned liquid before you cook.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of marinades out there you can do, you know, that what makes it unique with our product is we use a palm sugar instead of a brown sugar. We use two different very special soy sauces. We use a sweet soy sauce and a mushroom flavored soy sauce in there rather than a regular soy sauce. So that's what's the little bit of the uniqueness in it, and it all stems from an Indian influence style of cooking.
It's a really unique taste. The pork has a unique taste. Is this marinade, the original marinade, something you could use for chicken, for beef as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It works great on salmon, beef. If you're going to do seafood, I'd do maximum of 2 hours, no more than 2 hours.
Why? It just gets soggy?
It gets soggy, and plus you want to taste the fish. You don't want to taste the marinade. You know, that's the trick in marinating food. If you taste the marinade, then you think you've done it too long. You know, especially when you're paying, you know, for a beautiful piece of pork, you don't want to taste the marinade. You want to taste the pork.
Well, with marinating, for instance, I like to marinate a London broil, and we talked about this, and Jeremy, I'll bring you in on this too, since you're a grill master. You know, often we'll marinate our London broil for 36 hours, and I find it makes it much more tender, and I don't know if that's just my mind playing tricks on me or if there's some chemistry involved that makes the meat more tender.
It's definitely a chemistry. You know, the acids in that marinade are helping to break down the connective tissue of the meat. It is actually making it more tender. And about London broil in particular, we at the meat market have a very fortunate position in this breaking down whole animals. We have all kinds of other steaks that can be treated the same way that are just incredibly delicious, like the tri-tip or the flat iron, things that other places can't get because they're not breaking down whole animals.
I've heard of the flat iron. What is a flat iron steak?
A flat iron comes off of the shoulder blade, and it has a ribbon of connective tissue that runs down the middle. And, you know, we deal with whole animals, so we're, you know, for every 700 pounds of steer, we get 4 or 5 pounds of flat iron. Mm. And it's an incredibly delicious piece of meat. And takes very well to similar cooking conditions like a London broil would.
Now, Jeremy Stanton is with the meat market in Great Barrington, and in the introduction I mentioned that you specialize in cooking over wood fires. And before we start, and we'll get to the calls, I promise you, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. First of all, two questions. One, give me the difference quickly between grilling and barbecuing, and two, give me the advantages or disadvantages of a charcoal fire over a gas grill.
Got it. Barbecuing is slow and low, 225 degrees. For ribs, you're looking at 5 hours. For a brisket, you're looking at 12 hours.
Covered.
Covered in a smoker.
Right.
With smoke. You know, that's important. But low and slow. There isn't really... a searing process, so you're going to get that product in there with a rub on it. That rub will have some sweetness in it. You're going to get it in the smoker. You're cooking with wood smoke, and the low and slow is breaking down the connective tissue, making it deliciously tender and flavorful.
And there's a real art to that. There are competitions.
There's a real art to it, and competitions are, it's an amazing thing when you actually get into competitive barbecue, which we don't do because primarily we're dealing with local food, locally raised livestock, which it doesn't, won't ever fall into the fatty category of a Wagyu or even a corn-finished beef animal. So we love barbecue at the meat market. We do ribs and other things, but we certainly wouldn't be interested in getting into competition barbecue on that level.
Is that just because tastes are different?
No.
I've had Wagyu, and it's absolutely incredible.
The
fat is the best part, almost.
Absolutely, and that's why those animals are popular for that purpose, because that fat is really giving you a ton of flavor and a ton of tenderness. The meat that we're selecting from our farmers is a little bit leaner, it's great for a true meaty flavor, and it's really good to have a dry age program. You can really develop the flavors and the tenderness. But as far as competition barbecue, it wouldn't fit in. But we still do barbecue. And what we really do is cook animals over live fire, cook meats and vegetables and all kinds of things. Our sister company, Fire Roasted Catering, specializes in events out in the community. We go to people's homes and
pig roasts and whatnot.
We do pigs. Pigs are not our focus, but we do pigs. We do a veal calf. We'll do a lamb. We'll roast goats, legs of beef, chickens, ducks, all that. So as far as cooking with charcoal versus gas, you know, the benefit of a gas grill, of course, is that you go on your back deck and turn it on, and a few minutes later, it's hot at the temperature that you set it at. It doesn't take a whole lot of extra effort than that. But cooking with charcoal, you're going to set up your fire, and then an hour later, you're going to come out and give it some more coals, or depending on if you're cooking off the heat, you want to have the fire on the side and the food off to one side,
yeah,
so it's not direct. And it takes a little bit more finesse. And, of course, you don't, you know, you have all the great flavors that are being developed through that charcoal fire, which is adding a lot to the food.
We're talking with Jeremy Stanton of the Meat Market in Great Barrington and A.J. Jayapal of Miss Sydney's Secret Family Recipes Marinade Company. We're talking about grilling today and barbecuing. And so you guys cook with wood. What kind of wood?
We use local hardwoods. We're in a unique position because the ash borer beetle is creating a scenario where we're not allowed to bring wood across County boundaries, and that's a good thing for protecting the forest in our local areas. Mm-hmm. But what it means is that along with local food, we also have to cook with local wood.
Some wood bad for it?
Well, I mean, we don't use any pine. We don't use any soft woods. It's hardwoods. Ash is great. Maple, cherry is amazing. Oak, hickory, all of those are possible to cook with and have all add, a varying degree of flavorings to the meats that you're cooking.
So if I were to put three pieces of meat cooked over three different kinds of wood, cherry wood and hickory and something else, you'd be able to tell me which was which?
Well, I don't know if I would be able to tell you that. That would be an amazing experiment to do, and I'd be happy to take you up on that. Let's get that experiment
Fair
done.
Fair enough. All right. Maybe we won't fire up anything here.
No. Well, what we could do is on Friday and Saturday and Sunday night at the meat market, we have an asado grill out where we actually fire up the grills out back and we do outdoor dining on one of our Argentinian-influenced grills.
Nice.
That's all wood-fired, and we could do it there. We'll do the experiment.
Great
right
experiment.
There.
Put it on YouTube.
Exactly.
And you've also brought some food, and we'll talk about that after a break. But let's take a brief break. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Those who have been waiting on the line, your patience will be rewarded. We'll get to the phones in a minute.
Support for WMC comes from Pangea, North Bennington, Vermont. Contemporary American cuisine prepared with local sustainable ingredients, featuring international beer and wines, VermontFineDining.com and Facebook. Marbletown True Value Hardware, Stone Ridge, New York. A locally owned independent source offering air conditioners, fans, pool accessories, and more. MarbletownHardware.com. True Value. Start right. Start here. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge. Presenting Swing Dancing with Lindy Hop Heaven. And an outdoor barbecue dinner Saturday, June 28th, ashokencenter.org. And Ellis Medicine and Bellevue Women's Center, providing preventive heart disease screenings for women, ellismedicine.org.
Good. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It is Vox Pop. It is a Food Friday. Jeremy Stanton of the Meat Market in Great Barrington. AJ Jayapal of Miss Sydney's Secret Family Recipes also here. And AJ, I got to tell you, I was at my local tavern right around the corner from my house, Swifty's, and there was Miss Sydney's Whipple's Ketchup.
Awesome. Now, Dave's a very, very good friend of mine. He's a great restaurateur. He supports a lot of local people down there.
And you said he makes a uses your chutney, which is, by the way, outstanding stuff.
Thank you
and
very much.
And they make much. A pizza?
He does it two ways. He does a flatbread pizza with the chutney on it. So if you go in there, and instead of the red sauce or the white that's normally offered, he offers a chutney pizza. And then he's doing the chutney wings on it on the menu as well.
Tell me what's in this chutney, because you said it's traditional.
This is a traditional Indian chutney. It's not like an American chutney, which has more apples and pears and peaches, or what you'd see, like a traditional European chutney would be the Earl's Grey mm-hmm. that you see in the supermarket. Chutney, when I grew up in India, you depending on what region of India you grew up, every household had its very local condiments. And you didn't have, there was no Heinz 57 where I grew up.
Right.
So you had chutney. So everybody made chutney. This is my mom's recipe. It has dates, raisins, and spices in it. So basically it's a puree of dates, raisins, and spices. And very influential Indian spices. So cumin, cardamom, black sea salt in it. And that's what makes it traditional.
I got to tell you, I dipped some of the pork in it. I'm not sure if you're supposed to do that, but it's really good.
Thank you very much.
All right, so 1-800-348-2551. You've waited long enough, everybody. Here, let's go to the phones. Joseph in Albany. Joseph, you're up. You still there, Joseph? Oh, hang on. Hello, Joseph. No, he's gone. Give him another try. You sure you got the phones in there? All right, let's go to Maeve in Saugerties. You up? I think we're hanging up on people. I think this is not a good start to the show. Joseph, if we hung up on you, please call again. And Maeve, likewise. Are you hearing us? Okay. Well, gentlemen, let's talk amongst ourselves, shall we? All right, Jeremy, you brought some meat, not necessarily grilling stuff, but what did you bring? And tell us about it.
So I brought you some charcuterie for you to taste from the meat market. We do a selection of charcuterie.
Now, what is charcuterie?
Charcuterie is cured meats.
Okay.
So we have an Ossobal loin that we cured as lomo. That's
which I just tried, and it's like butter.
Yeah, the
it's
fat amazing. Is very amazingly delicious.
Yeah, and lomo?
And lomo.
Okay.
We did a mortadella, which is...
like a high-end bologna with surprises inside.
Exactly.
All right. Let's try a little bit of that.
We did a little finocchiona, which is a salami-style sausage, mm-hmm. Liverwurst, some brisaola, which is beef, and a little duck breast prosciutto.
Wow. And, you know, I gotta say, this is mortadella, is it?
Mortadella.
So you have pistachios in it?
That's a traditional garnish from mortadella.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really something I've not tried before. Very delicious. By the way, if you're watching online, you can actually see you can see this delicious pork that AJ brought and this platter of delicious sausagey things from the meat market in Great Barrington. We're talking to Jeremy Stanton of the meat market in Great Barrington and AJ Jayapal of Miss Sydney's Secret Family Recipes. And you're in Del Mar?
Yes, sir. Yep. We're based out of Del Mar.
I'll be darned. You know, that's where I live. I never saw you guys. You must keep a low profile. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Kimba, are the phones working? All right, let's give it a try. Maeve and Saugerties, you're up. Yeah, are you there? Hello?
Are you here?
Yes,
hey, guys.
I can hear you. You're on.
Here, maybe this is better.
Okay, I can hear you.
So thank you for having your guests on the show. I really love using my griddle all summer long. I cook on it, like, every day. That's my go-to thing when the weather's nice.
Me too.
And my question is, if you have any recommendations about grilling lamb, like, what cuts of meat are best on the griddle? And if you cook it like more like a steak, or do you treat it more like chicken? Do you just have any advice on cooking lamb?
Sure. You know, the first thing is get out of your comfort zone a little bit and get into some lamb leg steaks or some shoulder rib chops or something out of the loin or just lamb chop realm. And, you know, get a good sear on the outside and then slow it down from there. And don't overcook it. You know, really pull it off as pink as you are willing to eat it. And that should be the most delicious way. Of course, AJ would put some marinade on it, so we'll let him talk about that.
Yeah.
With lamb, what I would say is just, like, picture out, you know, how much time you have, you know, because a grilling lamb is such a beautiful, beautiful piece of meat. If you're going to do the shoulder, whatever else it is, it's not as quick as a steak. You know, you throw it onto a hard sear, you know, a couple of minutes. If you're going to do the leg, I would get it to a sear and then put it down, lower the heat, and then, you know, based on your flavor profile, you know, if you like it Greek style, I'd go with oregano, maybe some garlic, olive oil, salt and pepper, season it to your liking, and then go from there. And definitely make notes on it, because we all do this same thing. It's a way of life when you grill.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to the local meat store, and I'll see if they have any lamb shoulder steak.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, let's talk about, you mentioned, Jeremy, dry rub. AJ brought marinades, and I've never really tried the dry rubs, and what are some of the nuances of grilling with a dry rub piece of meat?
Well, I mean, to start with, you don't want to have too much on there, so it's a light dusting of rub. And
is it a common mistake just to dump it on?
Just to dump it on, and you get too much of that burnt flavor from the spices on the grill. Something that we do on a regular basis is a sumac rub, and sumac is growing everywhere. It's a bit of a weed. It's harvested primarily in the Middle East, and it's an incredible flavor. It's very sort of lemony and citrusy.
Yeah.
And you can get it at a Middle Eastern spice store or online, or if you have the energy, you could go harvest it yourself when the staghorns are big and plump and red. But I'll caution you that that's a lot of work.
Isn't there some poison sumac too you have to worry about?
That's a whole different plant.
Okay.
And definitely stay away from that.
So you shouldn't rub with poison sumac.
Absolutely.
Okay, fair enough.
Stay away from the poison sumac.
All right.
But a little salt, pepper, and sumac on any piece of meat is a great seasoning and a great way to go. I tend to have sort of a 5-ingredient rule. That is, like, any more than 5 ingredients is more than I want. So when I'm grilling, I stick with more simplicity and let the meat really speak for itself. Although I totally appreciate marinating and
yeah, I was going to say, now, I think AJ might have a few more than 5 in this marinade here.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some secrets in here, right?
A little bit of love in there.
All right, fair enough. Well, we know it works very well. The pork is good. Let's go to Donna in Great Barrington. Donna.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I was in the store today, and they had some meat on sale. They had Angus Porterhouse. They said that was choice. That was on sale. Then they had another choice meat, but it wasn't Angus. And they said, but it was the same grade, just from a different cow. Mm-hmm. And then they had Prime. And I'm wondering, does Prime just come from Angus, or can it come from, you know, other cows also?
This is a great question.
I have an answer for this question. So Angus is the primary meat breed that's grown in this country. The heritage breeds and the rare breeds are certainly making a comeback in many places, but the primary breed that we grow here is Angus. And the USDA has made a chart of marbling and fat cover to give it a grade, choice, prime, select. You know, so depending on what inspector is standing there and what, you know, sort of their take on that chart is depending on whether meat will be graded prime or select or
choice.
It's
based on the amount of fat?
It's based on the amount of fat, but also the amount of intramuscular fat. So how much fat is actually in the meat itself. And this really is specific to corn-fed, you know, even feedlot beef. We don't grade local beef. There just isn't the inspector at our USDA processing plants that has that ability.
Now, what's the highest grade? Is that select?
Prime must be
prime.
The highest.
Yep, prime.
Prime is the best.
Yeah, I mean, at the meat market, we don't deal in graded meats, mostly because the beef that we get is all grass fed, and grass fed is notoriously lean. Although that doesn't necessarily dictate tenderness or flavor. It does. It just takes it out of the running for a USDA grade.
Does that make a different cooking process to make that grass-fed beef more tender?
Grass-fed beef tends to cook a little faster than corn-fed beef. It just has a little less water content in it, and it. So we also like to eat it a little bit less cooked, a little bit more on the pink side.
Fair enough.
So the two choice meats, they said Angus, and then the other one was, it could be from a Hereford, or said any other cow.
Yeah.
But it's not Angus, but it's still choice.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, the Angus branding company has done a really good job of having us believe that certified Angus beef is what it is. But the truth is, once you take the outside off, most meat breed beef looks pretty similar.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
One day I was in a meat store and I bought a steak and it was a New York cut strip, and it was this Japanese. It wasn't Wagyu. It was a different one.
And Kobe.
Kobe.
I don't remember. It was one of the two, but it was beer fed.
Oh yes,
that's the Kobe beef.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, it was unbelievable. I mean, ridiculously expensive. You couldn't afford to eat it all the time, but the fat had this amazing taste that I can't really get over. Just how tender it was.
The amount of care and money to put into each animal. I mean, it's you know, if you massage me all day and fed me beer,
I didn't turn out that way. And,
but it is pretty amazing. I mean, how much they go into it. I mean, you know, the Wagyu beef, but a good point is we have such beautiful cattle in this own country, you know, with the heritage breeds coming back. The white-face Herefords are starting to come back. At one point, they were the main choice of beef many years ago before they got so over-slaughtered. Then, you know, they actually had no choice but to stop that, and then they started. That's when the whole push of Black Angus came around.
And so the heritage breeds are making a comeback. It's a conscious effort by those who raise cattle.
Definitely. I mean, the amazing thing about breed, you know, saving heritage breeds is that the best way to save them is to eat them, because then we'll grow more, and then there'll be more of them. It's sort of counterintuitive, but it works. It's a really good system, and the American Livestock Breeds Association has been instrumental in that, and just people's interest in preserving these genetic lines. It's a great cause and should be supported.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. If you have a grilling question or anything about meats in general or marinating or dry rub, give us a shout now at 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Jeremy Stanton of the Meat Market in Great Barrington and AJJ Paul of Miss Sydney's Secret Family Recipes Marinade Company. And we've enjoyed some great food here today, and we'd be happy to take your calls. So, genetically modified foods. Are there cows that are they're tinkering with the DNA of these to get some of these heritage breeds mixed with some of the newer breeds?
I don't know that they're focusing on livestock so much as they're focusing on livestock feed. You know, corn and soy are the biggest GMO crops.
Right.
And they're dealing with all of the other ones too. I mean, spinach and tomatoes and sugar and all of these other crops. But in my opinion, GMOs are something to be stayed away from. It's not necessary to feed the world, and more importantly, nature really is capable of feeding us. So we should focus on that.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Jane in Greenfield Center. You're Jane in Greenfield.
Yep.
You're on. Hi.
Hi. My brother gave my husband and myself some brook trout, and I don't care to fry it. And I was wondering if you had any good tips for putting a brook trout on a grill. They're about 10-inch, headless.
Absolutely. I would start with light seasoning, salt and a little pepper. I would put a couple of slices of lemon, and then I would wrap it in foil. Rub it with oil on the outside, wrap it in foil, and grill it inside foil. That way you're sort of guaranteed that you don't have it stuck to the grill or falling into the cracks. And when you open that foil, you'll have this beautiful puff of aromatic steam. You could put a parsley sprig in there, a clove of garlic, a slice of lemon.
But it's really not...
We have fresh chives growing. Would that be...
Perfect. That would be excellent. Right in the middle of it.
But, I mean, if you wrap it in foil, does it matter that you're cooking it on a grill?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll get some of that char flavor through, you know, and maybe it doesn't matter if it's so much an open grill or a closed grill. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're still outside, you're still enjoying the weather, and it's still a grilled piece of fish.
Would that be best on direct or indirect heat? I have to admit, our gas grill is a bit of a beast, it's hard to kind of regulate it.
Yeah, I think you could do it on a direct flame. I think if you do 4 or 5 minutes on each side, you'd be really pleased with the results.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jane. You know, one of the things in our transition, my family, we've switched back to, after 30 years, I'm now back with charcoal, and we use hickory wood. Once the charcoal is gray, I'll put the hickory in. But one of the tricks I'm learning and having to deal with is adjusting temperature, and it's a lot different than with a gas grill where you just turn it to low.
It truly is. So, I mean, it takes a little practice, and you got to try it, you know, different ways and adding different heat in different places.
All right, let's go to Nancy in Stamford, Vermont. Nancy, you're on.
Hi, I have a question. When my father was stationed in Hawaii, he talked about them roasting a whole pig in the ground with very hot rocks covered with wet banana leaves, and he said it spoiled you for pork after that. I was just wondering if you have ever heard of that.
I have definitely heard of that. Yeah. It's a fantastic way to roast a pig if you have soft soil and sandy soil. You definitely dig a deep hole and you line it with rocks and you start a fire in there and wrap the pig in banana leaves, and and bury them in the ground, and then a bunch of guys stand around and have a few beers and enjoy the afternoon. I've also heard of it not going well, where the pig comes out and it's not entirely cooked through, and that's a miscalculation.
How do you get the pig back out of the hole if the fire is still burning?
You actually smother the fire out and lay the pig in on the coals, on the hot rocks, and then cover him with blankets and then more soil, and then it's about a 12-hour cooking process for a 100-pound pig, and you have to wrap the pig in some sort of wire cage so that you can actually get him out of the ground again. It's not really a conducive way to cook a pig in the Northeast because we have rocky soil. Sure it could be done, but we choose not to do it that way. Plus,
you need a lot of beers for 12 hours.
You need a lot of beers for 12 hours. And by the time the pig gets out of the ground, usually the roasters are not
in any condition to lift the pig up. Well, Nancy, thanks a lot for that call. We appreciate
it. You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
All right, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. More Food Friday coming up.
Support for WAMT comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington. Offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. Orange County Tourism in the Scenic Hudson Valley, featuring spring gardens, wineries, boat cruises, country inns, and a full schedule of upcoming events, orangetourism.org. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080.
Our producer Jessica Blaustein Marshall is not here this week, and so we just sent Ian Pickus in to try some of the meat, and he's duly impressed. Frankly, this is my favorite day of the week. It's a Food Friday on Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by AJ J. Paul of Miss Sydney's Secret Family Recipes and Jeremy Stanton of the Meat Market in Great Barrington. All right, gentlemen, here's an email from Carl, who says, could you explain the best way to start a charcoal or wood fire in a Weber-style grill? And I guess, well, that's a round grill, so that you don't create unnecessary masses of smoke, which I love, by the way. I love the smoke.
The smoke part is excellent. Well, I mean, you know, definitely the chimneys are a pretty ingenious way to start a Weber grill. So the chimney, you put the coal in there, and you put a few pieces of paper underneath, and you light them and let it go and dump it out when it's flaming hot. I think that Weber kind of perfected that, and we should use it. You certainly could go with some sort of a propane torch or something like that if you wanted to speed up the process.
Whatever happened to just charcoal?
That lighter fluid definitely adds an element chemically.
But it cooks off, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but I always find it to still be there.
See, I like the smell of that. Maybe that's just me, but you know
it explains a lot.
Well, hey, but you let it cook off. You don't put the meat on until everything, you know, the charcoal is
very
gray, right? Well, that's good. Thank you for the email, and keep them coming. Let's go to Kiko in Catskill.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I had a question about cooking with or grilling with cedar planks.
All right.
Can you use regular cedar planks, that you would get at a wood yard, or do you have to use the really expensive ones?
Yeah, you mean as in cedar shingles for your house?
No. I'm not going to rip off the roof.
Take them off the neighbor's house. I mean, that's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Take them off the woodshed. No, just the regular cedar plant, you know, the ones that they sell packaged as a pair, and you're supposed to wet them down, right?
You definitely have to soak them, otherwise they will catch on fire.
Right.
And certainly you could use any cedar that you bought at the hardware store.
Okay. And does that impart a particular flavor, or is it?
Oh, absolutely. The aromatics from the cedar, the essential oils and the aromatic oils will definitely come through in the flavor of the food.
Huh, great.
Does that go better with some meat?
I'm sorry?
I was just asking if it went better with certain kinds of meat.
Classically,
well,
fish
is what it is.
Fish,
right?
Yeah.
Cedar planks. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Kiko, thanks.
Oh, thank you guys. Yeah.
1-800-348-2551. Dave in Oneonta. Dave.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Jeremy had mentioned some wood, different kinds of wood to cook with.
Yeah.
And I just was wondering, would you consider using apple or pear wood? And what kind of meat would you use that with?
Yeah, of course. You know, as far as the fruit woods in particular, I would have a fire going, and then I would add apple wood to it. I mean, having an actual apple wood fire would just be, it would take too much time. And apple wood doesn't grow straight like other hardwoods, so you can't really get enough of it to make a really good bed of coals. But all of those, pear, apple, cherry, all of those have very specific aromatic flavors to them, and they'll season foods in slightly different ways, but in different ways nonetheless. So just get your bed of coals going and add the chips that are little
pieces.
They're
gonna be wet though, right?
They don't have to be wet. You can go dry right on there, depending on how much smoke you want. If you can get them green, like right off of a tree, a living tree, those will have the most smoke and therefore the most flavor.
Okay. And what kind of meats would you use with the fruit woods?
You know, anything that you could put on the grill would benefit from those fruit wood, additions. So, but you know, definitely a pork chop. Definitely, if you're gonna do it in the smoker, low and slow, barbecue style.
Right.
Just put ribs right in there. I mean, a lot of barbecue is done with peach wood.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. So that's a very typical. Okay. Wood to actually fire smokers for like a pulled pork or ribs.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're
Dave,
welcome.
Thanks for calling. We love hearing from Oneonta. 1-800-348-2551. Nick in Selkirk. Nick, you're up. Hello, Nick. Are you there?
Oh, yes, I am here.
Great.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah. I was just calling with like a couple of tips. The first one was what we do with our smoker at home is we get hickory bark right off the tree and put it in water, let it soak in the water, and then put it on our fire, and it tastes real good with all sorts of meat.
I look forward to trying that.
Yeah, that's a neat one. I want to try
really
that
good.
Too.
And then another thing is with pig roast, we do pig roast. We'll stuff chickens inside of the pig so that everything cooks evenly.
Brilliant.
And that's really good as well.
I can't wait to try that either.
Wow, you're a genius. Nick, thank you.
Yep.
I appreciate the call. Let's go to Diane. Diane in Boston? Are you in Boston or from Boston?
I'm on the road. Hi.
Hi, Diane.
No, I'm up in the Adirondack Park working and just finished my school day doing some concerts for kids and driving back down to Albany listening to your show.
Well, nice to have you here.
Hi. My question is this, because I'm driving, I might hang up after I ask you and then listen on the radio if that's all right.
Fair enough.
But we want to experiment with grinding our own hamburger and grilling it this summer. And I wanted to ask you what best cuts of meat, what part of the cow would make the most flavorful, delicious burgers, and then is there a special way to cook that? And is there a special grind texture that we want? Like maybe, you know, not too fine or maybe, I don't even know. But so I wanted to ask you those three variables.
Those are great questions. Do you want to hang up and listen on the radio?
I would like to. So I can put my other hand on the wheel.
Okay, Diane. Thank you very much.
I thank you. I enjoy you so much. Take
Thanks.
Care. Have a good day. Bye.
Drive safely. All right, gentlemen, go.
Well, go ahead, AJ.
There's Pat LaFreda had a awesome burger blend. I mean, traditionally it's done with the chuck, but then there's master blends out there. You know, they're doing the chuck, they'll do the brisket, they'll do the plate muscleline, but it depends on what your flavor profile, if you're actually looking for a burger. If you want a, you know, very healthy burger, then probably go with the chuck on its own. But you want to
say a classic burger.
Classic burger. I mean, you want a muscle that's very active. You know, you don't want to take a filet mignon and because it's not, you know, just grind it up into a filet burger, it wouldn't make a ton of sense. But go ahead, Jer.
So I think the things that you could do to make a really unique burger grind would be use like a brisket. A brisket grind is very interesting. It's got enough fat in it. And I think dry aging is actually probably the single greatest thing that you could do to have a unique grind.
All right, explain to me dry aging. I see, you know, this beef has been aged X number of days, and I say, well, you know, doesn't it go bad? Explain what it is.
It doesn't go bad because the bacteria, there's a balance between positive and negative bacteria, good and bad.
All right.
And as long as you have enough airflow and the right temperature control, you can keep the bacteria in balance. And the good bacteria will actually add flavor and tenderness to otherwise tough cuts of meat, like a chuck, for example. But we would dry age typically ribs or loins. We'll age the chuck out to 14 days. But if you really wanted to do something interesting with the grind, really isolate the brisket and then dry age it another 14 days. You have to have airflow. You may have to have your specialty butcher shop do this for you, but I'm sure they'd be willing to.
This sounds like, you know, some sort of food poisoning case waiting to happen if you just take the meat, you know, with no experience and just try it.
Well, the thing about that thing is if it's gone bad, you'll know it's gone bad, and don't eat that.
All right.
If you're dry aging properly, you can age for a long time. You know, we can dry age for 8 weeks in some cases, depending on the fat cover and the intramuscular fat again of the animals that we're getting in. We tend to age about 4 to 6 weeks is our sweet spot for that, and we do that at our store all the time, and that really is where you get the best flavor development and tenderness, and you can take those tough cuts and add things to them. But you know, like chuck is the whole front shoulder of a beef, and you know, a chuck can weigh in at 150 pounds.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of amazing cuts within the chuck that a lot of people don't ever get to experience, because most of the chucks in the world go directly to grind.
Right.
And they go directly to grind a week after their process. So, you know, I would suggest focusing with your butcher on a dry age
brisket. And then her second part of her question was, how do you grind it? At what level of grind?
Again, I mean, you know, I have two grinders at our store, a big grinder and a little grinder. So we have a variety of different sizes. We can go from an eighth inch all the way up to 3/4 inch. Obviously, we tend to go at the quarter inch grind is the size that we like. So,
okay. All right. Well, that was good. Let's go back to the phones. Bill in Gilderland. Bill.
Yes. Hi. I was at a restaurant one day, and they served a strip steak, which they had cut horizontally, the whole loin, and they sliced it. It was red inside and was nice and dark on the outside. Now, I'm wondering if you have ever heard of that. I would like to try that on my grill. How do I get that color dark like that and red on the inside? Have you ever heard of kind of a way of cooking a strip steak?
Was it bone in or was it boneless?
No bone.
No bone.
And they just sliced it. Of course, the slices looked terrific, and
yeah.
the meat was terrific because it was strip steak.
Yeah.
But in slices.
Hmm. Yeah. You can get, I mean, again, at my store at the meat market in Great Barrington, you can get a strip boneless any size that you want. Generally, anything that you get at the grocery stores come in, vacuum packed. It's already been cut down to primal size or subprimal size. So we could get you a boneless strip, and the color is probably mostly about a good high heat sear right out of the gate, and then that turns into a little on the side, off the heat cooking, which gives you that nice red interior.
All right, Bill?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC Food Friday. Brendan on the Mass Pike. Brendan.
Yeah, hi. Listen, I'm looking for advice on how best to grill asparagus on my propane grill.
Okay.
I've been doing it for years, and I'm never able to do it as well as my wife can just bake it in the oven.
Fair enough.
Well, I mean, I suppose we could just let your wife do it in the oven. Would be one option.
That would be my answer.
I'll let AJ,
when I'm cooking steak, I like to put the asparagus right on the grill, and you can do both at the same time.
Indeed.
But the problem is they tend to get a little dried out.
One thing I did see recent, not too recent, but it was a Weber did this sort of grill pan. It was sort of a square grill with holes in it, and that is an excellent piece of equipment for doing asparagus. Also, really oiling that asparagus before you put it on the grill, and then not overcooking it. Those are the three things. How about AJ?
Like you said, I mean, I would definitely oil it, season it. Don't over-season it, because once you grill asparagus and it's hot and you pull it off the grill, it's still going to continue to cook. And the best way to season that, my suggestion would be just a little bit of fresh lemon zest on it and some, I don't know if you like the flavor of truffle oil, just a little bit of truffle oil and lemon zest. But because once you pull it off of the grill, let the initial heat, slow down and the asparagus will start to cook on there. But just like Jeremy said, you want to give it oil it and make sure it's oiled on a neutral oil. I wouldn't spend the money on a good olive oil or something to do it, but just salt and pepper, very well oiled on a high heat, and then pull it off. And then when it cools down, then season it then.
Sounds good.
Hey, Brendan, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to Russell in Clifton Park. Hi, Russell, you're on.
Hi, Pat. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good.
I'd like to know the correct or best way, whichever is right vernacular, to cook unshucked corn on the barbecue.
Aha.
That's a good one.
So, I mean, the way that I do it, and, you know, classically we're doing it for a party of 150 or 200 people, so we do a lot of it. And I have these big steel ovens that we work on. They're 4 feet by 3 feet. And if you can imagine a fire on the top and a fire on the bottom and 200 ears of corn in the middle. So we lob the top and the bottom off, but leave enough of the bottom on so that the husks can stay on. If you take too much off, they will just fall
drop
off.
Drop right off, yeah.
And then you can pretty much just put the heat on them. Get them on the grill, get the heat up good and high, turn them until basically all of the skins on the outside are dark. And then the nice thing about that is that because you've done it in the husk, they'll stay hot for a good long time. You put them on the table and your guests and family will be enjoying still warm corn for quite a while.
So the time to turn them is when they've darkened and then turn and darken and turn?
Yeah, you can just keep turning them until it's dark on all sides. So if when you're doing it, you turn them. If you find a light spot, you just leave that towards the fire and then just keep doing it.
All right, great. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. AJ, you want to weigh in on that one?
The only other way I've done it is, not doing it for the numbers. If you're doing it at home, you can peel the corn back, take the silk off, soak it in water for about an hour or 2 hours, and then, pull it back up and then do it the same way. Sometimes, if you're not too sure for the first time, depending on the corn, if the corn is really not in prime season and you try and grill it, it'll dry out. But if you soak it in water for about an hour and then just put it back together, that's another way we've tried it.
How about potatoes?
Grilling potatoes, you definitely need small potatoes to start with, and again, back to the light oil, salt and pepper, you can definitely do it. You can even parboil them so that you get some pre-cook and then finish them on the grill to get that skin nice and crispy.
Yeah. Okay, let's go. We have just enough time for another call here. Darwin in New York. Where are you calling from in New York?
Right now.
Okay, well, we've kind of a bad connection. Only a minute here, Darwin, so go ahead.
Yeah, you guys are talking about heritage breeds. Some of the breeds that are coming back are Belted Galloway and like Irish Dexter. And you'll find a lot of the grass-fed beef at the farmer's market. How would you prep that and cook that to keep it from being dried out? It's awful lean.
Okay, about 30 seconds here, guys, and then we'll wrap it up.
Eat it as rare as you can eat it is the answer.
Yeah, hard sear, salt, pepper. Give it a hard sear and pull it off, and determining on the size of cut that you have.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll call it. All right, gentlemen. First, let's get some contact information. Jeremy, your contact information at the meat store.
So you can find me at themeatmarketgb.com or fireroastedcatering.com.
Okay. And you guys are pretty busy this time of year, yeah?
We're busy this time of year all the way through until October.
Okay. Well, brilliant job. And AJ, the Miss Sydney's line of stuff is just amazing. I've seen a little of it locally, but Now I've had a chance to try it all. It's really good. How can we find out more about that?
You can go on to MissSidneys.com and all the shop rights locally. We ship anywhere in the country, even internationally. We're picked up a couple of local pubs, Swifties in Del Mar. Albany Pump Station is carrying it on their menu.
Terrific.
So that's about it.
Well, guys, thanks so much for being here, and thanks to everyone who listened and who called today. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. Dorset Theater Festival, Dorset, Vermont. Tim Daly stars in John Logan's play Red about artist Mark Rothko, DorsetTheaterFestival.org. And Barry Price Architecture, since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to our producer, Ian Pickus, and Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. Colleen O'Connell took the calls. And thanks to Kimba for handling the controls with great aplomb. Make sure you take WAMC with you. Download our new mobile app for streaming audio, headlines, podcasts, and more. Just go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store, search WAMC, and install. Thanks again for being with us this week on a post-fun drive week of Vox Pop. We'll be back next week. Alan will be here with Medical Monday. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned for a news update.